right, well, it's my great pleasure to introduce Tom Bridgeland from Sheffield, who's going to tell us about derived categories and algebraic geometry.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me. Okay, I could start by writing the title. Okay, so the basic theme of this talk is to study algebraic varieties. Study algebraic varieties via categories of sheaves on them. So I'm going to say something about this. So categories of coherent sheaves they're going to be. So I suppose I should try and justify why we're going to do it, you know, why this is an interesting or reasonable thing to do. Hopefully that will come out during the course of the talk. Of course, it can be a bit unpopular. Geometers like to study varieties via geometry because they are geometric objects after all. But this sort of approach can have some advantages. I'll say a bit more about that in a minute. But just morally, of course, it's the same thing. If you were studying a ring or an algebra, it will be the same thing as trying to work with the category of modules over that algebra, which we all know is a pretty sensible thing to do. So, but here's my general scheme. So I'm going to restrict attention, unfortunately, but this, we don't really know how to deal with singularities very well in this subject, so let's talk about smooth projective varieties. And I'll be talking over the complex numbers, but you could certainly do it over other fields. The first thing we're going to associate to this is a category of coherent sheaves on X. Right? So this is an abelian category. Coherent LX modules. So it's the global version of a finitely generated module over a ring. Right. Okay, and for reasons which I'm going to talk about, it's not very interesting just to consider this category. It's actually better for all sorts of reasons to go to its derived category, which I'm going to write like this. So by this I mean... the bounded derived category of coherent sheaves. I'll explain a bit about what this means. Okay, and somehow the point of... Well, one of the things that comes out of this work is that this is actually a very sort of beautiful symmetrical thing which you can associate with your variety X. And in many cases, it's got some really nice properties. So I guess the general point is to ask, how is the geometry of X? Reflected in properties of these categories. And maybe I could just mention that one reason you might want to do this sort of thing is physics, string theory. Somehow, when you run string theory on a variety like X, it seems, I mean, one of the lessons that seems to be coming out of recent research is that it doesn't really so much see X as categories of sheaves on X. I mean, if you want to understand string theory and dualities in string theory and so on, you really want to think about these categories. Okay, so let me first explain a bit about what's wrong with this one. So let me just state this lemma. If you have two different algebraic varieties, they can't have... Then they've got different categories of sheaves, right? So the right thing to say is if two varieties have the same category of sheaves, then they must have been the same. Okay, so this is kind of telling you that the properties of this category are really too strongly tied to X to be interesting. You can't have any interesting dualities showing up here. If they've got the same category of sheaves, then they're actually just the same variety. And you can say more than that. If you want to look at the symmetries of this category, so that's by that I mean exact auto-equivalences. So functors from this category to itself, okay, considered up to isomorphism, then this is just pickaxe, right? You've got that's the group of line bundles, holomorphic line bundles on X. So we can always tensor, whenever I have a sheaf, I can always tensor by such a thing. And then also the automorphisms of X itself. Okay. So again, maybe that's not so interesting. Yes, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, that means that any automorphisms over here are going to show up as automorphisms, and you get these other ones from tensoring by.
I'm just wondering if you have an isomorphism of category, I mean, the equivalence of categories, does that give you an equivalence
of the varieties? No, that would be saying that you've kind of got a functor back again. Right. Well, in this case, I guess you probably have. I mean, certainly, yeah. But what I'm going to say is, when we get to this case, that's certainly not true. You get many more interesting symmetries coming up here, and you get pairs of varieties with the same derived categories. And that's somehow, I mean, so all I should say is that this isn't true for dx. Neither of these statements are true for dx. And this is kind of a good reason to study derived categories in a way, because you can find interesting relationships between, well, what do I want to say? Interesting pairs of varieties and similarly, interesting groups of symmetries. Ought. So now these are going to be auto-equivalences of this derived category. And this really, I mean, this is my main motivation for work. For being interested in this area, is that you get these interesting pairs of varieties, you get some equivalence. That's saying, it's pretty rare, this. It's saying that X and Y are extremely closely related objects, but there's no way of seeing that relationship any other way. You know, there might not be a directly geometrical way to see that relationship. And similarly, if you get some, you know, you might get some beautiful discrete group which acts here, and you really should say that that group has something to do with X, but the only way you can see that is by passing to this derived category somehow. So that's kind of my motivation for doing this. Okay, so before I give you some examples, I should give you a quick recap on derived categories, I'm afraid. This will just be brief. So here we can, I mean, we might as well work in generality. We can take any abelian category. But the cases you want to think about really are, well, coherent sheaves on X. Or more simply, and you might as well think about this, just modules over some ring. And the derived category, how do you get this? Well, what you do is you take the category of complexes of objects of A. Okay, so here's a... Here's a typical one of these. It's got some differential, which squares to zero, right? So this is just a bunch of objects of A with maps between them. The differential squares to zero. And here's a morphism of complexes. Well, there's another complex, and a morphism is just a bunch of commuting maps like this. Okay. So that's a... morphism from. Right, so we can form this category whose objects are complexes and whose morphisms are like that. And then what we do is we formally invert quasi isomorphisms. Right, what that means is we keep the objects the same and we stick some extra morphisms in, which are kind of just by hand, we invert, we just put extra objects, extra morphisms and relations so that quasi-isomorphisms become inverted. Right? So maybe I should remind you that a morphism like this is a quasi-isomorphism if it induces isomorphisms on cohomology. Okay. Right. If you have any map between map of complexes like this, it induces maps on cohomology of these complexes, and I'm just asking that those should all be isomorphisms. Okay, so it's a fairly, from a homological algebra point of view, it's a very natural thing to do. For example, it enables you to identify a module with all its resolutions. You know, if you have an injective resolution of a module, then that, you can easily check, is quasi-isomorphic to the module just considered as a complex in degree zero. So kind of from a homological algebra point of view, it's kind of natural why you would want to do this. What's surprising is you get a very nice symmetric, you know, mathematically attractive thing at the end of the day. Okay. I should just say a little bit about its structure, although, I mean, from the point of view of a lot of this talk, you're really going to be able to just treat this guy as a black box, which I associate to X, right? But it would be nice to kind of know a little bit about it. So the structure of D of A, or some structure on D of A, is that it's so-called triangulated. And this is really not going to be very important for this talk. But what that means, I mean, it's just kind of obvious, is that there's a shift functor which basically says that if I've got some complex, I mean, I've labeled these objects, right? I could just shift the labeling down, so I can just shift everything down to the left one place, which means that the new ith guy here is now I plus 1. And you have to change the sign of the differential as well, but let's not worry about that. And there are some distinguished triangles, so-called distinguished triangles. So the point is that this is no longer an abelian category, so you can't talk about kernels and co-kernels and so on. But you have got something which acts as a vague substitute, which is these class of triangles. So this comes from mapping cones. Again, it's not very important, but if you have a map of complexes, then you can form another complex, which is called its mapping cone, which fits into a triangle like this. And what you want to do is just remember all those ones. So you want to just remember which triangles can be got in that way. Okay, so there's a whole theory, you know, you'd have to go through several hours of reasonably boring seminars to really understand the structure of this thing. But I mean, at least in principle, the definition is pretty, it's pretty clear why you would want to do this. It should be fairly clear why you want to invert these quasi-isomorphisms. Yeah, and then the structure is a little bit irky. I just want to state, I just want two facts which might make things later a little less confusing. So the first thing is that the original abelian category embeds in this derived category, okay, by just sending an object M to the complex, right, with zeros everywhere, apart from M in the middle. Okay, so these were just complexes of objects of A. I can just take them all to be zero apart from one of them. And this is going to be in the zeroth place. And the only other little piece of notation I'm going to need is that if I have two of these complexes, then by the ith homs between these, I'm going to mean the honest homs, but I shift this guy to the left by I places. Okay, and why is that a sensible thing to think about? Well, I'm just going to tell you that this is actually the same as X groups if, sorry, it's going into the wall. If I took two objects in my abelian category and I just put them both in degree zero like this, and then I worked out this higher HOM, then it would just precisely come out to the X group calculated in this abelian category. So really I should write. Okay, so those are going to crop up a bit, but let's go back to some geometry. So this is HOM I. So this is a category, so I know what it means to say about HOM spaces between two objects. Right. But here I'm introducing a new bit of notation, which is HOM with a superscript I here. And what I mean by that is just the usual HOMs, except I've shifted this thing. I've applied this shift function. Yeah. Yeah.
So, for example, an I is 2, how can you get, in this example, you say it's x2 of mn.
Yeah.
How can you get interesting maps between this m at the 0 point and n?
Yeah, good question. Because I've put in these extra. Yeah, the question is how can I possibly get interesting maps from a complex like that? And another one, which is just shifted to the left, right? So it's over here, for example. I'm saying that this is, in fact, the X group between M and N. Well, the point is that, remember, this is not the category of complexes. I've inverted quasi-isomorphisms, which means, I didn't tell you very much about this, but I've added some extra morphisms in, which are the formal inverses. And what it means is that I can replace, of course, if I take an injective resolution of N now, I can replace this by something like this. Sorry. So if I take an injective resolution of N, there's a map from here to here. This is a quasi-isomorphism, which means there's also a map in the opposite direction. And this is how I'm going to get maps from M into here. Sorry. Because there's maps from M into this guy, and then I can apply the inverse, I'm actually getting interesting maps. So that's how you can see this is the X groups. Yeah, okay. But let me think about cases where I do have injectives. Okay, so let me return to some geometry. So I guess this heading is... I'm going to give you some examples of varieties which have the same derived categories. These usually come under headings of Fourier-Mackay transforms. So Fourier-Mackay. Okay, so let's... And if you're completely lost already, just try and think of this as, to any variety X, I've associated this category, which is just a whole bunch of objects with vector spaces of maps between them. Okay. And that's just some big algebraic gadget, and we're interested in things like its symmetries and how often it's... when it's the same as the same guy obtained from a different variety. So here's the first example, which was... given by Mackay in 1981. So X is some abelian variety, any abelian variety. So it's some complex torus which can be embedded in projective space. And X, this is the dual abelian variety. So, well, there's several ways of saying this. I mean, one thing is I can just take this dual vector space and the dual lattice, but really what it is pick zero of X. It's the moduli space of degree zero line bundles on X. This is the dual. So the points of this parameterize degree zero line bundles on X. And that means that there's a universal guy. Let's see. P. On whatever it's called, X hat. Okay, so this is called the Poincaré line bundle. but it's just the universal thing that gives you this family of line bundles on X parameterized by the points of X hat. Okay, so what Mackay showed was that there's a functor. Well, yeah, let me write down the functor. Let me just write it down. If this looks terrifying, then I'll try and explain it. Okay, so what does all this write? So the conclusion, the statement is that this is an equivalent. Okay, indeed, these dual pairs of abelian varieties are an example of varieties with the same derived categories. What is this functor all about? Well, I need to tell you that I've got this product, so I have some projections. Okay, remember, these are just complexes of coherent sheaves. You could even think of them just as complexes of holomorphic vector bundles, if you like. So what we're doing is, given one of these guys, we're pulling it up, so just pulling it back by this, tensoring by this universal object, and then pushing it down, integrating it along the fibers. Okay, and this R here, it means I'm taking the derived functor, so I don't want to say too much about that. You probably know what it is. So I guess I should explain why Mackay was interested in this in the first place. I mean, he was interested in computing moduli spaces of vector bundles on these varieties. So this can indeed be used, compute moduli spaces of vector bundles. So let me give you an example of that. So if I take the easiest case, X is an elliptic curve, then X hat is actually going to be equal to X. What you can easily show is that, it's a nice exercise, is that if E is a semi-stable vector bundle of rank A and degree B, and let's assume that B is positive, then this is kind of if and only if, when I apply this functor, I get, again, a semi-stable vector bundle. But now something strange has happened to the ranks. I guess this one now has got rank equals B, and degree equals minus A, and of course... minus A now is... how does this work? A is now going to be... A is still positive. Well, of course, A and B were both positive. Because the rank of a vector bundle is always positive. Okay, so this just gives you a one-to-one correspondence between vector bundles of rank A and degree B and vector bundles of rank B and degree minus A, which is very useful. If you remember that if E has rank A and degree B, then E tensor L, where L is some degree one line bundle, so let's just call it L. This has A and A plus B. So now you can easily see that if you combine these two operations, one of them kind of swaps the rank and the degree, and one of them adds this thing, then you've got the generators of SL2Z in there. So you can, just by repeatedly doing this, you're going to be able to get yourself down to the situation where you've got rank 0 and degree the highest common factor of these two things. So this immediately gives you that the moduli space of semi-stable things of rank A and degree B is always isomorphic to X, okay. Which is some old result of a tier from 57. Okay, so just to re-emphasize, in this case, before we had some interesting equivalence between X and X hat, in this particular case, because the dual abelian variety is the same as X, you're getting rather a symmetry. And you're seeing SL2Z coming in up here already, right? So you're getting some interesting symmetry group. I mean, we all know that SL2Z has a lot to do with two-dimensional tori, right? But you wouldn't see that just looking at the complex structure. Okay, so this is... I mean, some people would say that Mackay's... This observation of Mackay that you have this SL2Z action is kind of a first sign of mirror symmetry coming up, because, you know, really that thing is coming from the SL2Z action on the on the symplectic torus. Okay. Right. So let me give you and just one other point about this. How do you prove this? If you're familiar with this sort of stuff, it's a good exercise to show that on an elliptic curve, the only indecomposable objects in the derived category are semi-stable sheaves. So any equivalence is going to preserve indecomposable things, so that does it for you. Okay, so now I'm going to try and tell you in general how you get these equivalences, because there's a very, very nice theorem how to do this. Due to Bondal and Orlov. And a little, yeah, I added a tiny bit at the end. So I really need my varieties to be smooth and projective here, probably over C as well. And they're going to be n-folds, so dimension n. Right, and the theorem goes like this, that any equivalence is of this form, is a correspondence like this, right? So okay, for some object. So now, I mean, in this case, we just took some line bundle on the product, but in general, I'm going to have to take some complex of sheaves up there. Okay, so that's a rather formal result. That's not so impressive, because now I'm just saying, okay, which objects P give me an equivalence? But there's actually a criterion for this. So such an equivalence, such a functor is an equivalence if and only if, I better continue up there. So there's three conditions. Right, so these are where these HOM I's are going to come up. Okay. Let me explain this in a second. So, unless... Right, let me just say... So, what I mean here is the skyscraper sheaf at a point, at the point Y, or the structure sheaf of the point Y, right? So here's my variety Y. I mean... You can think of coherent sheaves as a bit like vector bundles, but of course that's not correct. Some of them are just supported on sub-varieties. And in particular, for each point, you have a one-dimensional... You have a sheaf that's just got a one-dimensional fibre over that point and is zero everywhere else. That's the skyscraper sheaf, and that's what I mean by this guy. I'll say a bit more about these conditions in a minute. The point is that they're very easy to check. Well, they're often easy to check anyway.
So this was for all y and y.
Okay, and here omega x is the canonical bundle. So it's the top power of the cotangent bundle. So it's the canonical line bundle of the variety x. And I'm asking that these things should be invariant under tensoring with this. Okay. Okay, so that's the end of the theorem. So, for example, in this case, I mean, I told you this was an equivalence. I didn't say why. But so how could we check these conditions? Well, yeah, so the thing you have to check in this case, as kind of always, but if I apply this to the skyscraper sheaf, I guess it's a point of x hat now, this is going to precisely be the corresponding line bundle on x. Okay, so x hat parameterized line bundles on x, and the whole point is that this functor takes O of x hat to this corresponding line bundle. So this one is certainly true. There are no, you know, the endomorphisms of the holomorphic line bundle are just C. This is true because the canonical bundle of an abelian variety is trivial, so this is completely vacuous. And this is, well, here you just you have to check something. You have to check that any degree zero line bundle on an abelian variety has no cohomology at all unless it's the trivial guy. So that's what this is saying, basically. So, okay. And you'll see that this is vacuous for Calabi-Yau's, right? Which, by definition, are those things with trivial canonical bundle. So what that's telling you is that you're going to get a lot more of these things for Calabi-Yau's. And in particular, if we start thinking about the symmetry group of this thing, it's likely to be much bigger for a Calabi-Yau variety than anything else. In fact, so just as an aside, Bondal and Orlov proved, actually it's pretty easy from this, that if the canonical line bundle or its inverse is ample, then there are no interesting things going on here. So any pair of such varieties with equivalent derived categories are actually the same. And you can also check that the symmetry group is trivial. I mean, basically, that's because if this guy is ample, then how can you get something invariant under tensoring by it? Well, it's going to have to be supported on points, and you're going to end up showing that Y is a moduli space of points on X or something, and basically you're going to show that Y and X are the same. Okay. So let me just make a couple of remarks about this. I guess the first thing, which is good to see, is that these conditions are necessary. Actually, I've never known how to spell necessary. Okay. And why is that? That's just because phi is supposed to be, so to say it's necessary, I've got to say that if phi is an equivalence, why are these things true? Well, that just, if phi is an equivalence, it preserves all these HOM groups. So I've just got to calculate these guys and check that this thing is true. So I just have to get rid of this phi. And now you're just computing HOMs, you know, X groups between structure sheaves of points. And it's certainly true that if two points are in different places, there's no X groups between them. There's no interaction at all. And similarly, you know, here, the maps between a structure sheaf and itself are just trivial. This one's a little bit more complicated, and maybe I'll just make a remark. So for C, so the way to see this is that these structure sheaves of points are certainly invariant under tensoring by this line bundle, right? Because, you know, this thing is zero everywhere except at this point. So when I tensor it by a line bundle, I just 10 to the bit over this point with the fiber of the line bundle over that point. That's not going to do anything because they're both one-dimensional there. Okay, so... But the important thing is that... And phi must commute with tensor in omega, i.e. Phi of E tensor omega Y equals phi of E tensor omega X. And why is that? That's because, you know, omega is a categorical thing in a way. It's the thing that gives you sad duality. I wrote this down somewhere. Yeah. It's sad duality. It says, in both cases, you've always got this kind of... Okay, and this is, you can say this entirely in terms of the category. So any equivalence of categories is going to have to preserve this operation of tensoring by the canonical bundle. So that's how you can see all that. And the other important observation, which is in some sense completely trivial, is that it's a tautology. That's in the situation of the theorem. Y is a fine moduli space for the objects so these are living in derived category of X. Okay, because I mean, why is that? I mean, P is the universal object. So, yeah, I mean, it's not quite a tautology. What you have to show is that given any equivalence, which is therefore of this form, that actually takes families of objects to families of objects. So it preserves families, and it gives you a bijection between these objects and these objects, right? So it's a tautology that this is actually a fine moduli space. So it means whenever we're constructing equivalences, you know, if we want to try and find these derived equivalences, we should always be constructing some kind of fine moduli space, taking the universal object, shoving that in there, and then checking some conditions. So not any fine moduli space will do, because if you take some moduli space of vector bundles on a curve or something, it's certainly not going to be true that... what's not going to be true? Well, that, for example. Unless... and neither that one. So only in special... Very special moduli problems are you actually going to get an equivalence, but you're going to get them all like that somehow. And that's somehow another quite nice reason for studying derived categories is it increases the number of moduli problems you can think about. You know, if you've got a variety, usually you can just think about moduli spaces of vector bundles on that variety or coherent sheaves or something. And the number of varieties you're going to get like that is maybe not that... You know, well, I mean, it's a very nice problem to study these things. But once you start thinking about moduli of objects in the derived category, you've got much more flexibility, as we'll see in a minute. Yeah. You could see that actually from that argument I just gave with the Sayre duality. Can you? You can see it anyway. It definitely is an invariant. Okay, so I wanted to give an example of several of the things I've been talking about, where this business about extending the range of moduli problems you can think of, and constructing an equivalence. So I'm going to talk about this example of threefold, birational threefold. So here's the final section. So let me state the theorem. So suppose I couldn't decide on any letters here, but let's go for these slightly strange letters. Suppose W and Y, these are going to be birational varieties. So they're birationally equivalent. Smooth, projective, threefolds. And I need one other assumption with... right, well, let me just say the canonical bundles. So. NEF, or EG. So EG if W and Y are Calabi-Yau's. If you don't know what NEF means, don't worry about it. Just think about the case when W and Y are Calabi-Yau's. This is a slight generalization. And then the conclusion is... these things have the same derived categories. Okay. And you can actually get some results out of this, for example, that W and Y have the same Hodge numbers, which, that's a kind of... It is a non-trivial geometric statement. I don't want to try and pretend that derived categories give you loads of geometric information that you didn't previously know. That would be dishonest. But here is an example where you can get some geometric information that you probably wouldn't have known otherwise. I mean, there's another proof using motivic integration. You have to be a little bit careful about that. So maybe I need simply connected for this to work. Okay, what you do know is that what is an invariant of the derived category is, the Hochschild cohomology, which is somewhere where you sum up the Hodge diamond. I guess it's going to be in the opposite way to usual. So some combinations of the Hodge numbers are invariant, and in threefold case, there's not very many of those, so maybe I need to say simply connected. But, I can't remember exactly. And I guess one way, I mean, just kind of a slogan here, is that, I mean, what is this NEF business? These are precisely minimal models in the minimal model program, right? So, and the fact that there can exist birationally equivalent minimal models is precisely the statement that minimal models are not unique in dimension 3. So in dimension 2, say you're talking about general type or something, then every surface has a unique minimal model. That's not true in dimension 3, but the slogan here is, although the minimal model isn't unique, its derived category is. Okay, so I just want to say a little bit about the proof about this because, well, there's some interesting things to be said. And at some point, this proof actually did hold out some hope of saying something non-trivial about the minimal model program, but that somehow never really materialized. Such is life. So... let me say something about the proof of this. So the first step is use a result of Collard. Okay, which says that any birational transformation like this between smooth projective threefolds with NEF canonical bundles can be broken up into a series of basic steps to decompose, to reduce the situation. Where these guys are related by a flop. So what does that mean? It means, so here's W, here's Y. What it means is there are birational contractions of these things. So you have some singular variety here. So it's got mild singularities, which are technically Gorenstein normal singularities. Or maybe rational singularities. Okay, and what these maps are doing is just contracting some finite bunch of rational curves. So I say they're curves, of course, topologically these are CP1s. So there's some bunch of two spheres here which are being contracted down in both of these things. And this is the birational map. So it's kind of like a surgery, right? You're taking out these two spheres and you're kind of putting them back in a different way. So that's the kind of basic model for this transformation. And I guess I should add some conditions here, which is that the canonical bundle is trivial on each of these curves. Okay. Right, so F and G contract finitely many curves, rational curves. Okay. And then I just have to add one more condition which forbids W just being the same as Y. Okay, I don't want W and Y to just be the same. So the way I do that is I say, if I have a divisor over here, so that's just some codimension 1 subvariety, right? So I have some divisor over here. This map is an isomorphism in codimension 1 because I'm just taking out these... This is a threefold and I'm taking out these curves. So it's isomorphism in codimension 1. So the divisor over there, you can just take the proper transform and get a divisor over here. Right, and the condition I want is that if D is, say, G-ample, which means it's got positive intersection with all these curves, then when I take its proper transform, that's not going to be F-ample, it's negative, isn't it? Okay, so roughly speaking, a codimension 1 subvariety which meets all these curves, when I take its transform, it meets them all with negative degree. So now we just have to prove that DW. So the main problem is how are we going to construct? I mean, as I said, whenever you have a derived equivalence, there's a fine moduli space going on somewhere. So how do we construct W moduli space of objects? And D of Y. Okay. I don't want to go too much into the details of this. Just say something. I just wanted to sort of give a flavour of, I mean, how on earth do you ever construct equivalences like this? I don't, because you might think, and you know, people who are beginning in this subject often do, that what you should do is get the biggest book on category theory out of the library that you can find and start looking for a really general theorem that's going to apply to this case, right? And that's definitely not what you should do. I mean, the whole point is that you're supposed to be finding out how the geometry is reflected in these guys, right? So you should really at least, have some passing understanding of the geometry of the situation that's going on, and you just think about every piece of it and how is it reflected in this, and then try and do it like that. Okay, well, so the basic idea is I want to make W a moduli space of objects in here. I'm not very good at, I mean, I don't understand moduli of objects in a derived category, so what I want to do is, what you actually do is you define a weird, can I write a weird? A weird abelian subcategory A sitting inside D of Y. Okay. So let me just write a couple of the conditions. So these are things for which the cohomology is zero unless... And there's two others which you probably don't want to see. right? But you somehow pick out some. Okay, let me write one more of them. If you push down an object, this is zero unless I equals zero. Okay, so you are using this map F in some way. But anyway, so there's some conditions you write down. Then you define to be. What's P?
The thing on the product.
Not yet, no. I mean, P is going to be the universal object once I've defined a moduli problem. But the whole thing is trying
like
to.
The graph doesn't.
Just the graph. In nice examples, that will actually work, the graph, yeah. Yeah, for the simplest flop. But actually proving it, for the simplest flop, you can just prove it like that, actually. But in general, you know, it doesn't seem to.
These are, if you want them to be smooth, they are, you just need a simple flop, don't you?
Sorry?
If you want X and Y and W smooth, is it true that it's just a composition of the simple
one? No, in three dimensions, all flops take smooth things to smooth things. That's not true in higher dimensions. But
there's more than just this.
So, even if there's just one curve here, which I guess you can probably reduce to, there's kind of three cases, depending on the normal bundle of the curve. It can be two copies minus one minus, or one minus three. So these are, you know, a copy of the trivial bundle and O of minus two. Or so there's kind of three cases. And this case is easy. This case is pretty easy. So let me just say this to be a. So, this is just some name. It's a perverse point sheaf. If it's equations of E, but in this weird abelian category, A, and just the other thing, if it's Chern character. So, if numerically it agrees with a point. Okay, so you take. Right, because, I mean, the equations of this could correspond to all sorts of subvarieties and all sorts. So I want to restrict to those with the same Chern character as a point. But, of course, if I take the usual category of coherent sheaves and look at the quotients of O with this property, I'm just going to get Y back, right? Because I'm just going to get all the point sheaves on Y and the moduli space of those is just Y itself. But here I've really done something odd by changing this subcategory, and now I'm actually going to get W as the moduli space. So the theorem now is W is the fine moduli space. A fine one for perverse point sheaves on Y. And furthermore, the universal object gives an equivalence. Okay. So that's kind of a neat thing. So it all came down, I mean, this was kind of fairly methodical stuff, apart from how on earth did you hit on writing down this strange category. The way I did it was actually my office mate was thinking about intersection homology at the time and perverse, what are they called? Perverse T-structures in that case. And I just tried to do the same thing in this example, and it worked. So that was lucky, I think. It would be very nice to try and do this. Yeah, so there's several remarks. I mean, one thing that would be that people got a little bit excited about was, okay, we constructed a flop as a moduli space here. Could we construct flips like this? So existence of flips is one of the big, you know, this very large paper. And it would be nice to have a smaller proof of it. But I don't think you can do that, actually. I mean, it looks like it might be good, but I think it's too difficult. But a more reasonable example would be to try to generalize it to so-called Mackay flops in four dimensions. So I guess the simplest example of one of these is where you take the total space of the cotangent bundle of P2 and contract the P2. Right, so here you have a P2, and then you contract. And on the other side, you have another guy, which I guess is the total space of the tangent bundle of P2. I think that's right. And anyway, both sides are smooth, and you could, I think you could seriously try to do that. I think you'd just have to be quite clever on how to guess that subcategory. Let me just make one other remark about this. So after doing this, Michelle Vandenberg came up with a really nice characterization of this category A, which was that you can actually put, sounds horrendous, you can put a sheaf of non-commutative algebras on X, which sounds horrendous, but they're just 2x2 matrices. So you write down some algebra, which is just 2x2 matrices in coherent sheaves on X, except over this point where it's no longer a matrix algebra. And that non-commutative variety is then actually smooth and equivalent to both of these guys. And this category A is actually the category of modules over that algebra. So that's kind of the nice thing to think. So
can you run through that
one? Sure, yeah. Just write it over here. So coherent sheaf of non-commutative algebras R over X over the singular guy, which is generically a matrix algebra. Then the derived category of modules of R is equivalent to D of W and D of Y. And I have this weird abelian subcategory in here. Here you've just got the obvious abelian subcategory of just modules sitting inside its derived category. This guy is equal. So that's a much, much nicer way of saying it. So another thing you could start thinking about is, okay, we don't like, I mean, in the derived category world, it's really difficult when singularities crop up. Given a singular variety with mild singularities, as come up in the minimal model program, can you try and put some sheaf of non-commutative algebras on them to make them smooth? It seems that you can't, actually. It was a nice idea. But, you know, I mean, under some conditions, you can't, maybe. Some ideas are so nice that even if they're wrong, they're worth explaining. Okay, so I have about 30 seconds. Let me just... say that there's a conjecture, which I absolutely don't suggest you go out and try and prove, which is that this holds in all dimensions. So X, Y, birational. So let's just say Calabi-Yau. Smooth projective n-folds, then okay. I think this is a really, really difficult. I think this is probably as difficult as doing the minimal model program or something like that. Because, well, I mean, I think it contains that sort of complexity within it. Because if you notice, I really used the minimal model program in this proof. I broke it up into flops. Okay, and the point was that this new abelian category I wrote down, I said its cohomology is only in degrees 0 and minus 1. So in some sense, it's not very far from just the category of sheaves on Y. And neither of these two abelian categories sitting inside here are very far from each other in some sense. But if I compose lots of flops, I'll get two categories which are a long way apart. Okay, and then I would have no hope of just writing down, you know, some magic category that would magically give me an equivalence between these two guys. And here, of course, we don't necessarily have the minimal model program. So I think if you were to solve this, you'd really have to try and... It would be a bit like the minimal model program. You'd have to go in steps from coherent sheaves on here to coherent sheaves on Y. So I think...
I wonder if you could, as a general type, is there a relationship between the minimal models and the thing of the canonical model, which would be unique? Like if you have a prep and map, you get some kind of nice thing or not?
If you... Well, you've got a singular guy downstairs, so first you have to say what you mean by the drive category of that. So what's certainly not true, if you have some Crepin resolution like this, D of X definitely doesn't even sit inside D of Y, because this is a singular horrible thing. So again, it comes down to the problem of trying to modify this, maybe trying to put some sheaf of algebras on this, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, there's no easy answer to that. No, it's known for symplectic fourfolds. Only for symplectic fourfolds, no? It's known for symplectic fourfold, complex symplectic. But that's much easier than the general case, I guess. So just to finish, I mean, for those in the know, I think to try and prove this sort of thing, what you want to do is you really want to understand the kind of geography of T structures on this derived category of X. So somehow nearby varieties in the sense, birational equivalences which are like basic steps, just small flops or something, they correspond to nearby T structures. And to prove something like this, you need to be able to say, you know, you need to be able to understand the geography of all the T structures, which is what I've been studying since. So anyway, I'll stop there. Thanks.